We're going to talk a little bit about rotation with a specific emphasis on what we do in Texas this morning. You know, crop rotation has long been recognized as one of the most important practices that we as agriculturalists employ in our production systems. Sometimes I think we like to take credit for a lot of what we do, when in fact, if you dig into the literature just a little bit, I think what you find is a lot of what we do has been done before. And if you look at rotations and the benefits of rotations, you can look back into the literature and find passages from the Roman Empire with regard to the value that rotational cropping systems provided. You know, and as a bit of an overview, we all realize the benefits that we derive from rotational cropping systems. In Texas, we really focus a lot on high residue crops, but as Jimmy alluded to earlier, we are doing some new and different things now. But high residue crops certainly provide a strong background for us with regard to our rotational systems. When we look at those benefits, of course, soil moisture relationships are extremely important, and extremely important to us in Texas, as you folks know, sometimes can be a pretty harsh environment, as it was last year. Soil fertility relationships, again, Jimmy alluded to that, and that's something that I'm really going to focus on in my next series of slides and some of the work we've done over the past several years. Pest management obviously is key, and when we talk to our entomologists and our plant pathologists and our weed scientists, we always focus on the benefits that we derive from breaking up those different pest complexes by rotating various crops in that system. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about weeds at the end. Then there's the rotation effect, as we all seem to call it, and you can dig some more into the literature and you find this rotational effect. Those words pop up oftentimes, and that rotational effect sometimes is difficult to get your arms around. It's not real tangible, but we know it's there. And so it's a combination of all of those that I've just mentioned, and then perhaps even some things that we've never even thought about or things that we've not yet researched. So a lot of benefit, obviously, from rotational cropping systems. Now, as Jimmy said, in Texas, rotating crops with cotton, that focus in which we're talking about today, is not really that new to us. However, some of the crops that we're now utilizing in our systems might be a little bit different. You know, if we look in the southern eastern half of the state of Texas, if you look on the right-hand side of that slide, what you'll see is obviously we've got corn, which is a good rotation with cotton. Grain sorghum, and personally, in my opinion, probably the best rotational crop for us in Texas with cotton. Then I've got one picture down there in the bottom corner, and that's a shot of sesame. And as Jimmy mentioned earlier, we could probably also put sunflowers in there. We could put canola in there. And perhaps we could even put high biomass grain sorghums in there as we look to the future. As we move out into the western part of the state, that mix is going to be a little bit different. And you look at those photographs there, peanuts, and some of you folks might not be aware that we do grow peanuts in Texas. We know that Georgia is number one peanut production state, but we do it in Texas and we do it pretty well. And we grow some really good peanuts in this area south of San Antonio, but primarily our largest production region is going to be out in the high plains of Texas. So peanut is in that rotation with cotton. We also have wheat, and we're seeing more wheat acreage in rotation with our cotton crop out west, especially under irrigated conditions. Grain sorghum, of course, has always been a mainstay in the high plains, and we continue to utilize that in our rotations and perhaps a little bit more into the future as we see price fluctuations. And then, you know, don't throw rocks at me, folks, but cotton's also a rotation for cotton in West Texas. In fact, you can talk to some cotton folks out there and they'll say, yeah, my rotation is changing the orientation of my rows, or maybe just changing my variety. So we affectionately use cotton in the rotation for cotton in West Texas. It's that infrastructure that holds everything together, obviously. What I want to focus on briefly here for a few slides are the fertility relationships, and primarily what I want to do is talk about nitrogen fertility. We have been engaged in some nitrogen fertility management research and application here for a long time. For about 8 years, I think. And we found some very interesting results, and I wanted to share this with you this morning. We've done a lot of work across the entire state of Texas from the Rio Grande Valley all the way up into the High Plains And this work has been done in your fields. It's been done in producer fields, occasionally in some of our farmland, some of our local farms that we have research on, but primarily in grower fields. And that what and that's what was really interesting to us and what really stood out. But if we look at carryover nitrogen with depth, in these studies we had a hydraulic probe and we could go down to about 4 feet and extract that soil, and then we could do our soil analysis on it. And what we found was we were finding lots of nitrogen with depth. And I've just given you a very quick snapshot here. This is from three counties in Texas: San Patricio County, which is near where Jimmy is from, and then Calhoun County, which is also in the coast, and then Hidalgo County, which would be in the Rio Grande Valley. And what you see there, you see depth increments. Then you see how much nitrogen in pounds per acre we were finding at those depth increments, and then at the bottom there you see a total. So in a cotton behind cotton situation, we had 104 pounds in San Patricio County. In Calhoun County, we had 190 pounds behind soy, which obviously soy, being the legume that it is going to contribute some nitrogen to the system. And then in Hidalgo County, we were behind corn, and you see 210 pounds in nitrogen. So this is a snapshot, but what we found was this was not the exception, it was more the rule. So we found this in lots of different locations around the state. As we started working through this, we started questioning the system, and in terms of, okay, we've got nitrogen with depth, and in some cases very deep. Does the plant have the ability to utilize that? Is the plant going to be as efficient with the uptake of nitrogen and utilization in the surface, if you will, as it might be down to 12, down to 18, down to 24, even 36 inches? So Dr. Frank Hans, soil scientist there at Texas A&M University in the department, did some work with labeled nitrogen fertilizer. And a lot of high science goes on there, folks, that I probably don't understand very well. But suffice it to say, here's what we found. And that is, with fertilizer placement, when that fertilizer was placed in the surface, we had about an 82% recovery of that. And these are samples that we're taking in early bloom. The nitrogen that was placed at 6 inches, or what we would consider to be that 0 to 12 inch depth, was about 75%. We were about 75% efficient in recovery of that. When we got down to 18 inches, almost 70% recovery. And then what you see is we got down deeper at 30 inches and then on down to 42 inches, you see the precipitous drop in the efficiency of that plant in the utilization of that end. So obviously that nitrogen that we find with depth, at least down to a couple of feet, is certainly beneficial to the system, and certainly nitrogen that we can credit. So as we looked at the entire study over 8 years, or 7 year summary, we've got another year that's not into this slide set, the 7 year summary, it is not surprising what we found. Now, we had nitrogen management studies in all of these locations, and so what I'm showing you here is the year, the number of studies that we had. In the locations of those locations, the profiles that had more than 100 pounds of nitrogen in them, okay? And so you can see there, 33 of those sites out of 54 had over 100 pounds of nitrogen. That represented 61% of all the sites. Now, what kind of response did we get in our nitrogen management studies at all of those locations? And not surprising, based on that previous slide showing you how the plant utilizes that nitrogen with depth, what did we find? Well, we found that only 24% of our sites, we were getting an actual response to nitrogen fertilizer. And I know what you're thinking, and it's the same thing that we were thinking. And so, you know, the plant the cotton plant is an amazing plant, obviously. We all know that from the standpoint of how it can deal with stress and how it mines the soil for nutrients and water, etc. But obviously, we've got nitrogen with depth, and the plant was able to utilize that. And these were in high-yielding environments. We ran anywhere on dry land conditions from 700-pound cotton all the way up to some irrigated conditions of 1,700 to 1,800-pound cotton. So we had a real-world environment, and again, these were in your fields. So there is value there. So when we think about our production systems in the rotational complex, and I didn't have an opportunity to go back, Jimmy, and look at all the rotations that we had, but suffice it to say, with the exception of the few locations we had on the high plains, we were always in a rotation behind either grain sorghum or behind corn or behind soybeans. So a high level of production obviously requires a higher level of management. And that's why you guys are here this week, is to hone your cotton production management skills, obviously. And so, you know, as we have a higher level of management, it's going to be also a higher level of management associated with those rotational strategies that you guys are going to employ, you know, in your farm systems. So, you know, this is somewhat trite, but don't guess soil test is important. We in Texas are recommending an annual soil test now, and take that soil test to depth, especially for nitrogen, because there's obviously money that you can save from the standpoint of nitrogen with depth. The other thing I'll do is take the remaining few minutes I've got here to talk about weed resistance management, and there are guys that'll do a much better job of talking about this. You know, and I've been listening to Dr. Stanley Culpepper from Georgia talk about resistance management issues in the Palmer pigweed now for a few years, and I always enjoy listening to Stanley talk about that. So if you have an opportunity to hear Dr. Culpepper, I'm plugging him, but he does a great job with this, and he really impresses upon you how important this issue truly is. You know, Jimmy, we in Texas, I think, have at least to this point been somewhat fortunate, at least in a general sort of way, with regard to resistance issues. And we know we've got Palmer pigweed resistance in a lot of other states east of us, and we certainly have some issues that we're facing now perhaps with water hemp in the coast. But I think one of the things that we have done, and this is a benefit obviously to rotation, is rotating with grain sorghum has provided us an opportunity to manage our weed systems in a conventional sort of way. Now, a lot of folks haven't had that opportunity as we've moved into the technologies those systems. But in Texas, as Jimmy said earlier, we do a pretty good job of rotating, especially with grain sorghum. In grain sorghum, managed conventionally, obviously, with conventional herbicide systems, we're obviously getting some triazine herbicide into that weed management program. And I think we have benefited greatly from that. And so as we look to the future and perhaps even expanding our acreage of grain sorghum, and as we look to the biofuels era in Texas and high energy sorghums, I think that is a very positive thing for us in terms of managing weed resistance. And I think a very positive thing for you folks in other parts of the country that may be embracing grain sorghum and the biofuels issues as we move to the future. The other thing I would say here, and I don't have a slide that depicts this, but on the high plains of Texas, I can assure you that Palmer pigweed is there. It is prevalent. If you're looking for Palmer pigweed, it's going to be the number one weed that we are going to have on the high plains of Texas. Our guys do a really good job on the high plains of utilizing those soil applied herbicides, the DNAs, the yellow herbicides as we affectionately know them, in their systems up there. And they have done a good job in managing resistance. And I'm not here to talk about resistance, but I want you to know a little bit about what we do and how we feel grain sorghum is going to assist us in the past, which it obviously has, and in the future, because what Stanley always talks about is if you ain't got this problem, you don't want to get it. Prevention is the key, and I think we've done a fairly decent job in many cases, especially in the coastal bend of Texas and central Texas, in managing that resistance issue. So Jimmy, I guess in summation, you know, if you look at those, you look at Texas and you look at the rotational system for us, I think we've generally embraced rotation in Texas. I think we will take it to the next level as we move into different cropping systems, different crops that are going to be in that mix, especially with the value of grains and the value of oil seeds, the sunflowers and the sesames and the canolas, et cetera, may expand and move in and become a part of our system, and that's probably a very good thing. And then out west, of course, I think we're going to see more rotation in the West Texas community. More wheat will be involved, more grain sorghum will likely be involved, and some potential for even those same oil seeds that we look at in the South Texas region as well. So I look for good things for our folks in Texas. We do a good job of this, and I suspect that we will continue to do it in the future.